guess, happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. Who got married?
We did for 1 year.
Woo! I can't believe it's been a year already. 12 months of good Muslim, bad Musliming. What is up with that?
It's been kind of a thrill ride.
It has been a thrill ride. I would say that if there ever was a year for us to be Muslim and talk about it in the media, this would be it. This is the year.
Should I give a thank you to ISIS?
Thank you, ISIS. Thank you, Donald Trump. Thank you,
Ben Carson. Don't forget Ben Carson.
Yeah, thank you, Ben Carson. Thank you, President Obama. Thank you.
Texas.
Thank you, Texas. Just generally,
State of Texas.
Generally. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been an awesome year. Good Muslim, bad Muslim. It's been a year.
And let's not forget, thank you, Tinder, for all the awkward moments.
Thank you.
I don't have to worry about that because
I know. I was going to say, I don't really want to thank Tinder. And thank you to our audience. Oh my gosh. I never expected our podcast to have such an amazing audience when we started this. I just thought it was going to be me and Zara just having fun conversations in a room alone together and just like enjoying it. But thank you for joining us for this ride and like subscribing and commenting and sending us fan mail and giving us hugs out in the public. And it's been a really, really amazing time.
You get hugs?
I get hugs.
I don't get hugs.
You look more huggable.
How do I do that?
Just.
You're like, my shoulders? Is it all in my shoulders?
Just like.
Shoulder shake.
Put your head to the side.
Put my head to the side.
Just like give that little wink. Like a telenovela wink. And then they'll hug you.
You walk around with a telenovela wink and a shoulder shrug.
I learned from my hot doctor how to do this telenovela wink. It's just like that.
This whole description sounds like a pirate.
Just basically look like a Muslim pirate.
I need a hug.
And be huggable.
Matey. Muslim matey.
So there's like nothing going on in the news, right?
Yeah, what do we talk about?
There's like Muslims are so not hot right now.
There's like, actually, no. We're really hot.
We're so hot.
There's pretty much nothing more famous than Muslim famous.
We're so Muslim famous right now.
Muslim is bigger than Madonna.
You know, we're so Muslim famous that Glenn Greenwald retweeted us, which was kind of amazing.
That was the highlight of my year.
That was definitely the highlight of this podcast for me. He retweeted our Wired magazine article. Thanks to Omar for giving us a shout out. We are listed as one of the top five Muslim women on social media.
Quashing preconceived notions.
And because of that, I got a lot of haters on Twitter.
Really?
Yeah, I was like blocking left and right this week.
See, check it out. On social media, I get the social media hugs.
Yeah, yeah.
You get the in-person hugs.
I was getting in-person hugs. But yeah, on social media, I was definitely blocking left and right. I was like, I ain't got time for this.
My social media was covered in, what? Because I've got white boys all over my social media.
and NSA all over mine.
NSA is just kind of in the background everywhere.
Everywhere, yeah. NSA is recording our podcast for us. This podcast recorded to you by NSA.
Thank you, NSA. So speaking of things going on.
Yeah.
We literally recorded 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, we recorded before Thanksgiving and shit kind of hit the fan.
Yeah, talk about that. So the San Bernardino shooting just happened.
Yeah.
It was 14 people killed, 21 injured.
Yeah. And I think one of the interesting things about the San Bernardino shooting is I was raised in San Bernardino County. Ontario is technically San Bernardino. And I first heard about the San Bernardino shooting actually from Basim from the Cominas. He like gave me a call that morning. I was just like, what? He's like, did you hear about the shooting? I was like, no. Then I was like, well, in my head, I was just thinking like, well, San Bernardino is kind of like this area which has a lot of poverty. There's a lot of racism there. It's called the Inland Empire because the Ku Klux Klan, this is like popular myth for the area, the Ku Klux Klan, they wanted to call it an empire because they wanted it to represent, you know, the empire for white supremacy. So in my head, I was just thinking like that made sense that if there ever was a place where there's strife and like distress, like it would happen in San Bernardino. But then like the news came out. And what was your experience like when you first heard about it?
I still am absorbing the information about the Ku Klux Klan and the Inland Empire. I feel like an idiot that I didn't know that.
It's not well documented. It's more like myth for people who are in the area.
Which already is interesting to me.
Yeah.
That the Ku Klux Klan being the ones to coin the phrase the Inland Empire, yeah. Which I hear everywhere,
right.
We don't hear about. And Muslim famous is as famous as it gets. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. We're supposed to call it the inland region. There's been kind of like a move in the area to switch it from calling it an empire to a region.
If they were like not white, then I feel like everyone would know about their atrocities.
Yeah. Yeah, right?
White people do a good job of covering their tracks. I feel like we should learn from this.
So the shooting happened, and then what we first heard when the news came out was it was done by three white people, and three white men in fatigue went in, and they, like, were the ones holding the guns and shooting up the place. And then all of a sudden, it was about a man and a woman who are Muslim who did the shooting. There's a big shootout with an SUV. And I don't know. I think it's a little weird. I think it's a little bit of a stretch to not just go from three, like, beings to, like, three beings that were white to a man and a woman. So, I mean, that's my conspiracy theory, that there's some sort of a cover-up happening because of the shooting, because it just doesn't make sense. And, I mean, the couple just had a six-month-old baby. That doesn't make sense either.
That was the hitch for me, is that I was wondering myself, like, wait, okay, how does this couple that looks like my parents, first of all?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing terrorist-y looking about them. They don't look like they've been brainwashed. They don't look exhausted. They
don't even look like your parents because they're, like, 28 years old, right? They're so young. They look like our younger siblings. Like, they're the same age as my siblings.
I have really young parents.
You're just saying that because they listen to your podcast.
Yeah, that's true. They look like this young couple, and they feed into that fear of the Muslim next door, the terrifying Muslim terrorist next door that could look like anyone else and is dangerously normal.
Yeah.
So I was with the whole, okay, none of this makes sense. This sounds like an episode of The Americans.
Yeah.
Is the KGB involved? Because
right.
That's the last time I heard of this kind of shit happening. But then when I found out about the baby.
Yeah.
My husband had told me that the wife had given her baby to the mom and said, we will be gone for a while.
Oh, really?
That's what he said. Now, given my husband is a white man, so there's not a lot about him we can trust.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. But that really hit it home. I was like, ooh, I can't jump on the conspiracy train now because that's like, whoa, what?
The thing that I heard, like, even if it was the couple that did it, it's like there's got to be a third person. I read somewhere that there is a third person. They just don't want the media to cover the third person, that they haven't found this third person because they don't want to have, like, hysteria happening. And that the government has, like, said that they're still looking for this third person. They just don't want to have.
Let me get this straight. What you just said is that the government doesn't want to introduce this third person not having been found because they don't want a hysteria happening. The last 2 weeks with Donald Trump in the media, what was that exactly?
I know.
That was not a hysteria?
Yeah.
Because that sounded like hysteria
it's
to me.
Kind of hysteria, yeah. So we're kind of living in an era of hysteria now, right? So
another word for it would be fascism.
Fascism. There's been hate crimes everywhere. Coachella, the Valley of Coachella, which is in, like, near San Bernardino, they just had a firebomb at their mosque. There was a gurdwara in L.A. which had graffiti put on the walls. And it's a gurdwara, so it's not even, like, Muslim, but still. Then there's all this stuff happening, like, hate crimes happening everywhere. There's, like, women who are getting their hijab pulled off. There's people being pushed onto train tracks. And then this most recently, I just shared this, there's a fifth grader, a Muslim fifth grader, who got killed by being pushed off the roof of his school by his classmate. Which is just so scary to think that,
God.
That we have to worry about our children getting murdered in school as a 10-year-old.
Wait, go back. I have not heard about this one.
So in Seattle, there was a hate crime that happened on this past Saturday, and it was this 16-year-old Somali-American boy who died after a fall from a balcony near Seattle Central College, where he had been taking classes. And it is not clear, but they're saying that he was beaten and pushed to his death by a white man. And they're saying that the police are trying to figure out if it's a hate crime or not. And I think the community, the Somalian, local Somalian community, are saying that this act happened because of this increased sense of fear going on in the world today against Muslims.
At least somebody has said that.
What do you mean?
I'm just glad that a person in a position of authority has said that it's part of the rhetoric that's around us that's inciting these acts of violence.
I mean, we're saying it. I don't think the police has said it yet.
Oh, who quoted that?
I mean, I just said that, like, me.
You just said that really smart thing?
I just said, that was just me. I'm saying this was a hate crime, but
I was hoping it was in the article.
No, it's saying that, it says a police official close to the investigation who spoke on the condition of anonymity because the case is open said a preliminary examination of Hamza's body shows no injuries that were consistent with having been physically beaten and added that there wasn't any evidence suggesting foul play, which is crazy.
there's no evidence suggesting foul play. So they think that he just fell off.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So obviously there's stuff going down in Seattle. And this is just one incident. I feel like there's a lot of incidences happening now.
In France, it is rampant with hate crimes
right
now.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Especially after what just happened with the...
There are mosques being torn apart, saying that it's for some investigation. They go in and break stuff down and then run back out. Here's the other thing. Both you and I haven't really been keeping up with this. Like, I'm going to fall on another American idiom that I'm not sure I'm using correctly. On the nose. Is that even right?
Mm.
We haven't been keeping up on this because, A, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you kind of just can't not keep up with this.
Yeah, you can't not keep up with this. I mean, and then after this incident happened, President Obama gave a speech. Were you able to listen to that? I think that happened on Saturday.
That was an aggravating speech to listen to.
Yeah. Well, I was in the car listening to it. I think one of the things I was really struck by in President Obama's speech from this recent one was that the first half of his talk sounded like something that President Bush could have said. It sounded like an excuse for us to continue to spend money on the war on terror, for us to continue to drop bombs from drones, you know, continue to, like, figure out who ISIS is. It was very, like, we're in a war. And then the second half of the speech was about not all Muslims are terrorists. Like, I kind of needed to hear the President of the United States say that. Like, I needed him to say that Muslims are a part of American society. And then he said that line about how Muslims are everywhere. They're your doctors. They're your something else. And they're your sports heroes.
Yeah.
Which I thought was kind of a, I was like, all right. But the thing that bothered me about that line, and I think I'm kind of pulling from what Aisha Siddiqui said on her Twitter, is that, like, that kind of feeds into this good Muslim narrative, right? Like, that Muslims are only good. And I think that that is, there's something kind of problematic about that. I mean, we talk about that here on our podcast all the time. It's like that, you know, we Muslims are complex. We don't all have to be doctors and engineers and sports heroes. We're literally a part of every aspect of the society. I've had like 10 Lyft and Uber drivers who've been Muslim, right? So like, we see them everywhere. We're just really quiet about that.
But that whole polarity in comparison of like good Muslim and the bad Muslim is not just starting now, right? Like, that was one of the things that I was so shocked by, is because that's something that the Black community has heard for years.
Forever.
So I was really surprised to hear that this was just like a part of our discourse that we were going to pretend like there isn't a history of that we can refer back to and be like, oh, this is kind of a fucked up thing to say.
Yeah. And why do you think it's fucked up to say it?
First off, I'm going to preface that by saying I figured out it was fucked up to say it, and I am not a presidential speechwriter. So I just kind of feel like, whoever wrote that speech, maybe work on that. Because, like you said, it's the myth of the model minority, and that so long as fill-in-the-blank people are good, and these are the ways that they are good, then it's okay.
Yeah.
They're good people. I also was really struck by the pronouns that kept getting thrown around.
I wasn't paying attention to that.
I was totally keeping track of pronouns because I'm obsessed with them. There was this, Muslims are good, Muslims are Americans, and we don't discriminate. I mean, it automatically separates Muslims from Americans.
Yeah.
And creates this split, a contrast.
Yeah, it totally makes a difference.
And so, again, I am not a presidential speechwriter. I'm surprised that this got past them.
And the other thing that really I was feeling when I was listening to the speech was there's a lot of nuances, I thought, to how he was talking about the Muslim community. But I knew as soon as he said what he did that the far right was not going to care about the nuance. They were going to take whatever opportunity they had from the speech to vilify. And sure enough, the next day, Donald Trump was responding to Obama's speech. The whole Fox News media network was responding to the speech and just spewing out hateful rhetoric because they're going to do opposite of whatever Obama says. So, yeah.
I mean, I'm just looking at the first section of his speech here where he says, the FBI is still gathering the facts about what happened in San Bernardino, but here is what we know. The victims were brutally murdered and injured by one of their coworkers and his wife. So far, we have no evidence that the killers were directed by a terrorist organization overseas or that they were part of a broader conspiracy here at home. But then it goes on to say, but it is clear that the two of them had gone down the dark path of radicalization, embracing a perverted interpretation of Islam that calls for war against America and the West. First of all, where in the Quran does it say that there is a war against the U.S.? Where does it say it? The statement he says is perverted interpretation of Islam that calls for war against America and the West. Why is that an interpretation of Islam? When he says that it's an interpretation of Islam that calls for a war against America, I challenge anyone who calls any of this even an interpretation of Islam. By that math, anything is able to be an interpretation of Islam.
Yeah, it's really silly. It's just
pretty broad damn net.
Everything's an interpretation of something else.
That's the next step right there. Like, that's as broad as it gets.
You know what I'd like an interpretation of?
What?
A Muslim Christmas.
I was wondering how you were going to segue that.
So, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Merry Muslim Christmas.
Merry Muslim Christmas. That's our segue into talking about Christmas. So one of the things about being Muslim is we don't get to celebrate Christmas, yet we are in America surrounded by mistletoe and evergreen and red poinsettias. And what was Christmas like growing up for you?
This magical holiday that I didn't get to be a part of because...
But you have Christmas trees in your house.
Now?
Yeah, like talk about that.
Okay, so here's what. When I was growing up, yeah. I'm the first kid. And by the last kid, we had a Christmas tree 11 years later. All right. My year, when I was growing up, I wanted a Christmas tree so bad that my sister and I went out into the, like, there were these woods behind our house, and we chopped off branches from a pine, and we duct taped them together, okay, and we posted them next to our chimney.
Fire hazard.
Yeah, but that's what it always looked like in the movies. And then my sister and I went and we wrapped our pound puppies because what I knew about Christmas gifts was that it was like your deepest heart's desire.
Yeah.
And my parents had finally bought us these pound puppies.
Oh, my God. I've always wanted a pound puppy.
They were the best.
I never had one. I know.
Christmas present. So, okay, we knew that Christmas was whatever your deepest heart's desire is, yeah. And our parents had gotten these pound puppies, so we wrapped our pound puppies.
That's adorbs.
Isn't that adorable?
And then when did you open up the Christmas?
It's also kind of pathetic. And then we opened it up, like, literally an hour later because we wanted to act it out. So we were like, oh, my God, Santa got his pound puppies.
Like, you didn't even wait until Christmas morning for this?
No, and also I was, like, in sixth grade when I was doing this.
Oh, my
God. I wasn't even, like, in kindergarten.
My memory of, like, Christmas is that we didn't have Christmas in our house, but we ended up going to a cousin's house in Alabama. We used to live in Tennessee. And when we'd go to that cousin's house, this older cousin, she had married a white guy. So their house was a very white Christmas. So anytime we went to their house, we would participate in Christmas. And there's pecan pies, and there's, like, wrapping of presents. But that was the only time we had Christmas, was when we went to this cousin's house.
How old were you?
I think I was 7th grade. I think we basically did it through 5th, 6th, 7th.
Do you remember when you first learned about Christmas?
No, do you?
Yeah.
When did you learn about it?
Well, because I was in ESL when I was in kindergarten for like 6 months.
Right.
ESL is English as a second language. So it was like around just after Thanksgiving that I started going to like the regular kindergarten.
Yeah.
And they were singing all these Christmas songs.
Right, right.
And everybody knew the words and I didn't know the words. And I was like, did I not do homework that I was supposed to? And the teacher just looked at me and was like, it's fine. She just, like, shrugged it off and was like, you don't need to know any of this. But I was like, how does everybody know? And they're all so happy. They're singing Rudolph and, like, all these other carols. And I didn't know what the hell. I didn't know what a carol was. I didn't know what a nursery rhyme was. I didn't know what Christmas was. That was my first introduction.
You know, when I was in the 5th and 6th grade, I was in choir in elementary school. And we would sing Christmas songs and we'd go to the local mall. I think 5th and 6th grade, I was... I think I must have been living in Illinois at the time. We moved around a lot as a kid. Illinois is like Midwestern state, you know. And we would go to malls and sing. And I wonder actually how mom had to describe it to me because I don't actually remember these conversations because I'm sure it must have been very awkward for her for me to go.
So you just sang them like with a group even though you didn't know what their origins were?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would ask them, and I'd be like, and they would talk about Santa. I'm like, y'all are stupid because Santa's fake.
Oh, yeah.
Santa's not real.
That was something my parents told me about. They were like, they explained Santa to me.
Yeah.
Santa is this fake guy that Christian kids believe in, but don't tell them that because it's not polite.
I think I even, like, would hang stockings by the fireplace with the hopes that, like, it would happen. Because I was like, yeah, we're Muslim and we don't believe in Santa, but maybe it's actually true. I was a dreamer. I imagined a lot as a kid.
When somebody first described Santa to me when I was little,
yeah,
they said he's an old man that brings presents to kids. He's this old guy with a long white beard and robes, and I thought that they were talking about Khomeini. I'm actually not joking.
I know you're not joking. I'm laughing. Because that's amazing.
I mean, because I was basically indoctrinated.
Like, Khomeini, Santa, side by side.
They look the same. And they said that he had a hat. Khomeini had a hat.
Yeah, this is true.
And they said that he loves children. And all I knew of Khomeini was from my textbooks at Farsi school, where he was, like, kissing babies and, like, playing with kids. And I was like, Khomeini! And I was like, Khomeini brought us better than something better than toys. He brought us revolution. He brought us freedom of religion. I was an impressionable young child.
Yeah, clearly. Clearly. Santa Khomeini has done a number on you.
It worked.
Woo. Speaking about crazy people in leadership.
Another nice segue. That's actually pretty solid right there.
Donald Trump.
Let's go to Election Watch.
Election Watch.
We have seen a war on faith.
Is there a Muslim problem in the war?
Absolutely.
I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation.
Can we even call it an election anymore? Just the circusness. Circus Watch.
Is he a Republican? Isn't he a Republican? Is he a man that you unzip and find a ISIS robot underneath?
I really do wonder.
I wonder that, too.
So we're clearly talking about Donald Trump. I kind of hate talking about Donald Trump because everybody's talking about Donald Trump.
Oh, my God. I hate talking about Donald Trump.
And he kind of loves that.
And everyone wants to ask the good Muslim, bad Muslim girls what our take is on Donald Trump. Donald Trump is a fucking dickwad.
I mean, what can you say when, like, I tried to make a joke about Donald Trump being Darth Vader, and then there was, like, a meme about it, too.
Yeah.
And everybody's responses on my Facebook wall was, like, don't give him that. Don't give him Darth Vader.
Why?
Because that's how low he is. Like, people don't even want to give him the names of beloved villains.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I don't really follow Star Wars. I don't really understand this whole beloved villain thing.
Well, here's something you do follow, which is elections.
I do follow elections.
That I don't understand. How is it that he's leading in the polls?
I have no idea how he's leading in the polls, except maybe these pollsters are being done by, like, right-wing think tanks, and they're only calling up certain types of voters, because it makes absolutely no sense. I would imagine he's leading in the Republican polls, but, I mean, he's just getting a lot of media. I don't understand any of this. None of this makes sense to me. Like, absolutely none of this makes sense to me with all my elections background and my, you know, master's education and years of experience. I do not understand how Trump is leading in the polls.
So I'm going to add two things that don't make sense in this picture to me, okay? In addition to that, the GOP now is saying that they want to kick Trump out.
Right. Like, Paul Ryan jumped on the microphone and was like, you know, I usually don't talk about elections, but I'm going to talk about elections here, and Donald Trump should not be saying what he's saying. Like, that's how extreme it's gotten.
See, the GOP doesn't have, like, a bone of altruism in its body.
Yeah.
So why all of a sudden are they being like, ah, these are not the droids we want?
I don't know.
I don't understand this. And this makes me actually believe in the Hillary conspiracy, that, like, Hillary is funding, the Clintons are funding Trump, because it makes all the Republicans run to the Democrats, and Hillary looks the most Republican of all the Democrats right now.
Yeah. And the thing for me, like, what's terrible about Trump is because everyone's kind of treating Trump like he's this toy, right? They're just like, oh, crazy white guy who hates Muslims, ha, ha, ha. But there's direct hate crimes that are happening because of what he's saying. And I think, like, it's one thing to, like, let crazy people be crazy. And I'm legitimately calling him crazy, like, actually crazy. That Donald Trump is being opportunistic about taking his moment on the microphone to use Muslims as his, you know, scapegoat to talk. But there's very, very dire hate crimes happening. And it's really, really scary. As a Muslim, it's really scary to know that we're just being hated on like this.
Yeah, I mean, but it just gets worse. That's the thing. See, every last month, we were like, it can't get worse. It did.
Yeah, totally did. With the shooting, right? Like, in Santa Bernardino, it's just like, come on. Like, we were already, like, so soon after the Paris shooting, this had to happen, the San Bernardino shooting. Like, really? Like, it kind of isn't too good of a narrative. You know, it kind of feels like it's a little bit of a setup.
Feels a bit convenient. Also, when you take a look at the map of everywhere ISIS is located,
yeah,
all of them include pipelines.
Right. Like, oil pipelines.
Which I just recently read that Israel is purchasing ISIS's oil. What?
Well, then.
What?
Well, then, I mean, that right there explains it all.
But I don't even know if that's true. But this is what they're saying.
I believe it.
That, like, this gets even more and more bizarre for me. The fact that everybody uses the word Muslim and just, like, throws it around gets more and more bizarre for me. I feel like I'm living in the Twilight Zone.
Yeah. And, I mean, your creeping Sharia is related to this.
Yes. Oh, this is an awesome opportunity to segue into creeping Sharia and give a shout-out to one of my favorite comics, Hasan Minhaj. Okay, so Hasan Minhaj was on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, and he came up with an awesome acronym, WISIS. White ISIS.
Hasan has been killing it on that show. His comedy is, like, amazing on that.
He's a funny man.
He is funny.
I think it's because he's Muslim. Muslim makes you funny? I don't know.
Yeah.
They say we can't tell a joke, and yet.
So what was his segment that he did?
So he did a bit about how Donald Trump is basically ISIS and how the GOP is basically doing everything that ISIS is doing, which is creating this war between the Muslim world and the West.
I have a second theory, and I think this is where the evidence points. Donald Trump is an extremist leader who came out of nowhere. He's self-financed, recruits through social media, attracts his followers with a radical ideology to take over the world, and is actively trying to promote a war between Islam and the West.
Oh my God, Hasan, he's white ISIS.
That's right, Trevor. Donald Trump is white ISIS. WISIS.
So there was another cool thing that I heard, speaking of creeping Sharia.
Yeah.
A friend of mine mentioned, actually, that she was considering converting to Islam as a form of solidarity.
Oh, my God. Does this mean you get points because she, like, came to you?
Dude, you're right.
You get the Muslim converting points there. Dude, you got to share some of this.
That's why you're keeping track, because you know I'm going to share them with you.
Yeah, you're sharing your, what are they called? The swab points?
Heaven
points? Sabab points? You're going to share your Sabab points with me.
That means I have 4 million now.
Yeah, I mean, like, we mentioned the Sabab points in an earlier podcast. This is just, like, the running joke that, like, Zara used to convert her school friends to get
Heaven points. I also have a piece about this in My Infidel Husband, an article that I write. You could look it up. Heaven points, Zara Norbash.
So your friend's just converting to Islam, just like that?
Yeah, because she was saying, I want to do it in solidarity to be like, yeah, and what of it?
Yeah.
Which I think is awesome.
So she, like, does she believe in Allah?
No, I think that's the whole point. Does ISIS believe in God? I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so.
She's reclaiming it.
Which is kind of awesome to hear from a white person.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. We'll have to give her Muslim lessons.
I'm going to have to give her some prayer lessons.
Prayer lessons. Teach her how to pray.
Yeah. Show her, like, the form.
And show her how to eat bacon.
Sure, yeah. I'm going to have to give her all the loopholes.
Turkey bacon. Okay, you can eat bacon if it's bacon bits and turkey bacon, but not if it's from the pig.
Those are your rules, girl. And we have another creeping Sharia. That's really not a creeping Sharia. This is just, like, me co-opting.
Yeah, you're so excited about this.
Star Wars! Star Wars is happening at Christmas! I'm getting tickets. I'm going.
Yeah?
Yes.
Are you going at midnight?
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Can you, when you go to watch this movie, can you wear a Princess Leia hijab?
Can I?
I think you should.
I mean, I'm going to wear a costume. But here's my Star Wars casting.
Yeah.
All right? This is Muslim Star Wars.
Okay.
I say, you're Princess Leia.
Me?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're totally Princess Leia.
Who's my Luke Skywalker?
I'm Luke Skywalker.
Does that mean we're in a relationship?
No, we're brother and sister.
I've never watched the movie before.
Oh, my God. We have some work to do on you, girl. X-Men, Star Wars.
What? Star Wars. So wait, the sister and brother don't have sex together.
No, that doesn't occur. No.
Okay, just checking.
Doesn't occur.
Okay. Anyway, so that means we're siblings. You're Luke Skywalker. I'm Princess Leia.
I also just heard you say that you kind of want to have sex with me, and I'm going to hold that in my little pocket right there. I'm a little bit flattered. It's getting a little bit warmer in this closet.
It's hot in here.
We're at the grotto again. Thank you to the San Francisco Writers Grotto. And also thank you to Taz for coming on to me right there. Okay, here's my Star Wars casting. You're Princess Leia.
Uh-huh.
I'm Luke Skywalker. Reza Aslan is Ben Kenobi.
Oh, yeah. I don't know who Ben Kenobi is, but I know who Reza Aslan is.
And it totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Even though you don't know.
I have no idea.
I think Han Solo is Hasan Minhaj.
Totally.
That's who you hook up with.
Oh, nice.
That works out, right?
Yeah, he's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah. And I still have to cast Chewbacca. I still have to cast the Emperor. I was going to say Darth Vader for Donald Trump, and I got a lot of pushback. People were like, don't do that to our...
We can have Donald Trump as a holder for Darth Vader right now.
Or the Emperor. There's like a crazy weird Emperor guy.
What about the big fat guy? Isn't that from Star Wars?
Oh, Jabba the Hutt. He totally is Jabba the Hutt.
Okay. Donald Trump, Jabba the Hutt.
Yeah, that's done. Yeah. And then Mosley's...
Who's Ben Carson?
There's like this guy that works for Jabba.
Okay.
That would be Ben Carson.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. And then there's Mosley's Cantina, which is basically Dubai.
Okay.
They go to this place, super crooked.
Dubai. Done. Yeah.
I still have to cast R2-D2 and C-3PO, so I need your guys' help, listeners out there.
Yeah.
Like, shoot me some. Yeah, I'm going to make a poster.
Yeah, we're going to do it. Speaking of posters, a Good Muslim, Bad Muslim award for me this time around is going to go to this poster this ad was just bought in the New York Times this week. It's for the We Are Better Than This campaign. Linda Sarsour was kind of taking the lead on this, but this poster has all these amazing organizations that came together in coalition to buy this ad. I mean, those New York Times ads are not cheap, but the poster was called Is This America? There's an American flag on it, and it says that we are appalled by the surge of divisive rhetoric that sows the seeds of more violence to come, and we are better than this. They have a donate to this, sign the pledge, and there's all these amazing people that have signed on to this already, all these amazing organizations that are leading it, including Move On, Center for Community of Change, Linda Sarsour from the new project called Empower Change, National Domestic Workers Alliance, Demos, United We Dream, NARAL, Color of Change. So just amazing people have signed on. You know, as a progressive and as an organizer that works in this movement, I'm just really excited to see that all these organizations who I'm often in coalition with and ally with have signed on to this, because for me, it really makes a difference if I'm going to do this work in the movement to know that the movement is in solidarity when it comes to messaging on this issue. So, I'm giving a Good Muslim award to Linda Sarsour.
Nice. I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Zara, do you have an awkward Ask a Muslim?
I don't know how I skated by without one.
I know. It's a little weird.
I think because I was just inundated by scary accuse a Muslim all over the internet. But I know you have a fantastic awkward Ask a Muslim.
It's not fantastic. I'm so uncomfortable by this.
It is a Twilight Zone moment.
It is a Twilight Zone moment. Yeah, so I'm in the Bay Area right now, and I'm staying with a college friend. And we had a very interesting lunch today where he was asking me. He opened up the conversation by talking about Aamir Khan, the Bollywood star in India. And so Aamir Khan's been saying some stuff about Modi, saying that since Narendra Modi came to office in India, that there's been an increase in crimes against Muslims and marginalized communities in India. The sentiment in India across the way is like a very Hindu-centric kind of tenor, right? So
I'm surprised Aamir Khan said that, actually.
Yeah, Aamir Khan's kind of a progressive actor. He has a film studio. I actually got a chance to interview Aamir Khan at Sundance a few years ago. That interview's up on my YouTube. And I've always kind of, like, respected him and his choice in movies. And Aamir Khan, you know, he was raised in a Muslim family. Like, a lot of these Bollywood stars are Muslim, and they have to play these Hindu characters in these Bollywood movies. Then the conversation kept going, and we basically got into this really loud fight in this restaurant because my friend was defending Modi, saying that Modi's not that bad and that Trump's a lot worse. And he was saying that if Aamir Khan was unhappy with what was happening in India, he could leave the country. And I was like, that's like saying that as a Muslim in the U.S., that if I'm unhappy, I can leave the country, and versus like taking a stance and doing something about it.
Also, Modi is the prime minister of India.
Right.
Donald Trump does not hold office.
Yeah, totally. Totally the same. And that one of the things that he said that really bothered me was he was saying that, like, we kept drawing comparisons between India and the U.S. He was like saying that U.S. has provided all this opportunity. He's Hindu Indian, his family of origin. And he was saying that when his family came over from India, the U.S. provided all this opportunity. And he says, while we were at lunch, he was like, I don't shit where I eat. So why would I say anything bad about the U.S.? I love the U.S. I'm not going to say anything bad about it. And then I just like was like, hold up. Like my whole career is based around saying bad things about the U.S. And he was kind of implying that, you know, if you say bad things about the U.S., you should not be here. And I was like, I say bad things about the U.S., and then I organize people to vote. I do advocacy. I pushed for legislation to go through. I do, you know, real politics and policy work needed to make change in the U.S. because I love this country. Just because I live in the U.S. doesn't mean I have to accept all the policies that are created for me. I do work to change it.
Yeah. Do you know how I know that conflict is necessary to change?
How?
Netflix.
Right. What?
Yeah, I would not binge watch a show if there was not continued conflict. We like that. It creates an arc. It's interesting for everyone, and it's why we have the First Amendment. Back to his saying, don't shit where you eat, that would mean that I would literally have to leave the country to poop.
Right.
So he tells you all this, and, like, you kind of went into this, like, haze. You went into, like, a fog.
Yeah, because I think it's one thing to have to deal with Islamophobic rhetoric from the media and Donald Trump. And it's another thing if you have to do this with a friend that you've had for 15 years. You know, we've known each other for a really long time. And like one of the things that really struck me is that he's this guy that doesn't read the news anymore and he doesn't have social media. He's never listened to a podcast. He's never read any of my columns. And he, like, says that the reason why he doesn't want to participate in intaking media is because it's stressful. So he's just a lot happier being a capitalist, non-voting person that's able to have these debates without intaking any information, which is so contradictory in so many different ways. So I think what a lot of us are feeling right now who are Muslim and are brown is that for the first time we're kind of seeing an other side of people in a way that we haven't seen since 9/11. Like, all of a sudden, I'm seeing a lot more posts on Facebook from friends who are having very violent conversations with people who they once trusted. And we're kind of at an ideological battle on the internets right now where people are having these conversations both on the internet but in, like, with friends and family in this very, like, deep way. Like, this whole issue has turned very divisive in our community.
Yeah, I mean, wherever people call it ideological, I always question that. To me, it's just racism. I think Islam has become racialized.
Yeah, and, for sure.
And I think people get away with talking about it as a conflict of ideology when really it's a matter of racializing people based off of their religion.
Yeah.
And a lot of it is, we have a template for this, anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
It's shockingly similar. So I guess I'm ready for my fatwa.
What's your fatwa on?
The media. Mm-hmm. I've been so angry. I've been fatwa angry with the media.
Which media in specific are you talking about? Because there's a lot of wildness coming out of the media right now.
Yeah, like I'm not even going to get into like the Daily News, right? Like that's a nightmare.
Right.
But I'm talking like the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, the New York Times. I feel trolled by you.
Can we also talk about how the media entered the apartment of the San Bernardino shooters?
What the fuck was that?
And that how the landlord, like, opened up the space for them to enter into the space. Like, I'm all for, like, if the San Bernardino shooters are the shooters, I'm all for them, you know, like, due process, right? But, I mean, that's so unethical as a journalist. Like, I mean, I've never gone to J school, but I imagine that's not part of the ethics of being a journalist.
Well, also, where the hell is the FBI?
Well, the FBI, like, had left the scene. Like, they had, like, gone through and searched it. And then this media goes through and they see, a Quran on the coffee table. And they're like, oh, that's evidence for terrorism. And you're just like, you're taking these things that are just about people being normal and trying to put more weight behind it than they actually are.
You just reminded me of something else, is that this couple was able to buy all of these assault rifles online.
Really?
Yeah,
I didn't know
they,
that.
They purchased them online. It's like, how is the NSA and the FBI not on top of this?
Yeah, for sure.
What the fuck?
I didn't know that.
And previously, if you've been listening, I fatwa'd the NRA.
Now you're just fatwa'ing the media.
Well, the media, I feel like they're the ones, the journalists are the people that we turn to take the information that is all around us, digest it, and give it to us in a way that makes sense and that we can understand and that we can learn from. And that's not happening.
Yeah.
And at the same time, I remember a post that you put up, Taz, actually, that was about how grateful you were over Thanksgiving for all of the Muslim activists that are doing a lot of really great journalism out there to reverse a lot of this rhetoric.
It's been really surprising to turn on the radio or the news and see friendly faces of Muslims that I know. And it's been really great to see that we have a community of folks that are pushing back the narrative that the mainstream is trying to kind of put on us right now.
If you want to see more of the shots of ways that I feel trolled by the New York Times, if you're one of those guys out there who writes to me, it's always guys, give me evidence. There's going to be evidence on my Tumblr. Check it out. What's your fatwa, Taz?
I want a fatwa on Muslim dating sites.
Okay, say more.
Because, so I'm trying to date again. I mean, this is like my continuous life process. So one of the things that came up after the San Bernardino shooting was that the guy, Saeed Rizwan Farooq, he was from the U.S. He was in my neighborhood. He grew up in San Bernardino. And he found his wife on a Muslim dating site, which got me all thinking because I'm all about these dating sites right now that, you know, what if I'm going through the dating process and I find a Muslim guy on a dating site and then he turned out to be ISIS? Like,
whoa,
what the fuck?
That's terrifying.
It's terrifying, which is also kind of intimidating. Like, I don't really want to date. Like,
I feel like you would figure out pretty quick if he was, because I feel like he'd be a pretty abrasive asshole.
You think?
I might start with your murder. I don't know.
But I mean, like, what do you think is the romance story behind Saeed and Tashfeen? You know, like, he found this woman. They got married at the Black Rock, right, in front of the Kaaba. And he went and got her and then brought her back. You know, like, both you and I have mothers that came on marriage visas, right? Like, so, you know, now they're saying that they're going to kind of, like, crack down on that and, like, be a little bit more vigilant about marriage visas. And I just imagine, like, my mom and your mom, like, what it must have been for them to marry a stranger and, like, come to the U.S.
But she's the one that purportedly radicalized him.
Allegedly, right.
Allegedly,
and she was
yeah.
the one that wasn't from the U.S. So should I not date Muslims on dating sites? Is that what's happening here? Is that...
Well, your record's not so good because the last one was clearly an FBI informant.
That wasn't Muslim.
No. Oh, yeah, that's true. But so you're screwed either way, basically.
I'm screwed either way.
I don't think there's...
So I think next time I go to a wedding and an auntie asks, why don't you try the internet to date? I'm going to say, like, what about what happened to Saeed? Come on.
Oh, no.
And then boom. I think that excuse is going to last me at least for 6 months. I think I'm good on the auntie circuit for the next 6 months of why I'm not married.
The auntie circuit. I'm going to add that to my list of conspiracies.
The conspiracy of the auntie circuit. So I have to go catch my plane because it's time for me to go back to L.A. So we need to close out our show. Zara, what's going on with you?
I'm bringing all atheists are Muslim back to San Francisco.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's been 5 years. I performed it at Dartmouth. It was awesome. Friends keep asking about it. And given everything that's going on with atheists and Muslims out there, everybody's wondering how a couple can be married and stay that way.
So where can people hear about your show?
My website, ZaraComedy.com. Follow me on Twitter at Zara New.
Yeah, and Zara and I will also be at Michigan, University of Michigan, at the South Asian Awareness Network Conference, I think in January.
Yeah.
And
it's coming up.
And so just keep following us. I do have to say, on my news, my column has come to an end. My radical love column is done. You can go read my last conclusion post over at loveinshallah.com. It'll be the top post up there. And I link back to all my columns in that column.
Can we also give a shout out to your new job in this election year?
We can totally give a shout out to my new job. I'll be working as a campaign strategist for 18 Million Rising. I'll be working on election stuff, as well as providing digital media support to the Muslim and South Asian community. So if you are a Muslim and South Asian in the community and you have a digital campaign that you want to run, hit me up. I'm all about Election Watch 2016, as you all know, and we're going to do this. We're going to go in hard for the next 12 months.
Taz, can we close out with your favorite Christmas song?
Are we going to sing?
Yeah, let's sing your favorite Christmas song. What is it?
Can you sing it? It's Santa Baby.
Oh, boy.
Or we could do Jingle Bells.
Okay, Jingle Bells. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, what fun it is to ride in a one-horse open sleigh. Hey! Happy Muslim Christmas.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the Good Muslim, Bad Muslim podcast, hosted by Taz Ahmed and Zara Norbash. You can follow Taz on Twitter at TazzyStar. That's TAZZYSTAR. And Zara at Zara New. That's ZAHRANOO. The show is produced and edited by Quincy Sarasmith, and you can find us on the web at goodmuslimbadmuslim.com. To follow the conversation, please use the hashtag GoodMuslimBadMuslim.
You get hugs?
I get hugs.